there seems to be nothing real in the world except my father and Shakespeare. Marcus's tigers are false. Mr. Megan's millions are false. There is nothing really strong and true about Hesione but her beautiful black hair, and Lady Utterword's is too pretty to be real. The one thing that was left to me was the captain's seventh degree of concentration, and that turns out to be...
rum.
A good deal of my hair is quite genuine. The Duchess of Dithering offered me 50 guineas for my hair under the impression that it was a transformation. It is all natural, except the collar.
Look here. I'm going to take off all my clothes.
Please,
no. Do!
Alfred, for shame, are you mad?
Shame? What shame is there in this house? Let's all strip naked. We may as well do the thing thoroughly when we're about it. We've stripped ourselves morally naked. Hell, let us strip ourselves physically naked as well and see how we like it. I tell you, I can't bear this. I was brought up to be respectable. I don't mind women dyeing their hair and men drinking. It's human nature. But it's not human nature to tell everybody about it. Every time one of you opens your mouth, I go like this.
He cowers as if to avoid a missile.
Afraid of what will come next. How are we to have any self-respect if we don't keep it up that we're better than we really are?
I quite sympathize with you, Mr. Mangan. I have been through it all, and I know by experience that men and women are delicate plants and must be cultivated under glass. Our family habit of throwing stones in all directions and letting the air in is not only unbearably rude, but positively dangerous. Still, there's no use catching physical colds as well as moral ones, so please keep your clothes on.
I'll do as I like, not what you tell me. Am I a child or a grown man? I won't stand this mothering tyranny. I'll go back to the city where I'm respected and made much of.
Goodbye, Alf. Think of us sometimes in the city. Think of Ellie's youth.
Think of Hesione's eyes and hair.
Think of this garden in which you're not a dog barking to keep the truth out.
Think of Lady Utterword's beauty, her good sense, her style.
Flatterer. Think, Mr. Mangan, whether you can really do any better for yourself elsewhere. That is the essential point, isn't it?
All right, I'm done. Have it your own way. Only let me alone. I don't know whether I'm on my head, on my heels, when you all start on me like this. I'll stay. I'll marry her. I'll do anything for a quiet life. Are you satisfied now?
No. I never really intended to make you marry me, Mr. Mangan. Never in the depths of my soul. I only wanted to feel my strength. To know that you could not escape if I chose to take you.
What? Do you mean to say you're going to throw me over after my acting so handsome?
I should not be too hasty, Miss Dunn. You can throw Mr. Mangan over at any time up to the last moment. Very few men in his position go bankrupt. You can live very comfortably on his reputation for immense wealth.
I cannot commit bigamy, Lady Utterword.
Bigamy? What are you talking already? About, Ellie?
Only half an hour ago, I became Captain Shotover's wife.
Ellie, what nonsense! Where?
In heaven, where all true marriages are made.
Really, Miss Dunn? Really, Papa?
He told me I was too old, and him a mummy.
Hector quotes Shelley.
Their altar the grassy earth outspreads, and their priest the muttering wind.
Yes, I, Ellie Dunn, give my broken heart and my strong, sound soul to its natural captain, my spiritual husband and second father.
She draws the captain's arm through hers and pats his hand.
The captain remains fast asleep.
Oh, that's very clever of you, Pettykins. Very clever. Alfred, you could never have lived up to Ellie. You must be content with a little share of me.
Oh, Lizzie Carnes!
You are well out of it, Mr. Mangan. Miss Dunn is the most conceited young woman I have met since I came back to England.
Oh, Ellie isn't conceited, are you, Pettykins?
I know my strength now, Hesione.
Brazen, I call you brazen!
Alfred, don't be rude. Don't you feel how lovely this marriage night is, made in heaven? Aren't you happy, you and Hector? Open your eyes. Addie and Ellie look beautiful enough to please the most fastidious man. We live and love and have not a care in the world. We women have managed all that for you. Why, in the name of common sense, do you go on as if you were two miserable wretches?
I tell you, happiness is no good. You can be happy when you are only half alive. I am happier now I am half dead than I ever was in my prime. But there is no blessing on my happiness.
Life with a blessing. That is what I want. Now I know the real reason why I couldn't marry Mr. Mangan. There would be no blessing on our marriage. There is a blessing on my broken heart. There is a blessing on your beauty, Hesione. There is a blessing on your father's spirit. Even on the lies of Marcus, there is a blessing. But on Mr. Mangan's money, there is none.
I don't understand a word of that.
Neither do I. But I know it means something.
Don't say there was any difficulty about the blessing. I was ready to get a bishop to marry us.
Isn't he a fool, Pettikins?
Do not scorn the man. We are all fools.
Mazzini, in pajamas and a richly colored silk dressing gown, comes from the house.
Oh, here comes the only man who ever resisted me. What's the matter, Mr. Dunn? Is the house on fire?
Oh, no, nothing's the matter. But really, it's impossible to go to sleep with such an interesting conversation going on under one's window. And on such a beautiful night, too. I just had to come down and join you all. What has it all been about?
Oh, wonderful things, soldier of freedom.
For example, Mangan, as a practical businessman, has tried to undress himself and has failed ignominiously. Whilst you, as an idealist, have succeeded brilliantly.
I hope you don't mind my being dressed like this, Mrs. Hushabye.
Oh, on the contrary, I could wish you always like that.
Your daughter's matches off, Mr. Dunn. It seems that Mr. Mangan, whom we all suppose to be a man of property, owns absolutely nothing.
Well, of course, I knew that, Lady Utterword, but if people believe in him and are always giving him money, whereas they don't believe in me and never give me any, how can I ask poor Ellie to depend on what I can do for her?
Don't you run away with this idea that I have nothing.
Oh, don't explain. We understand. You have a couple of £1,000 in exchequer bills, 50,000 shares worth 10 pence a dozen, and half a dozen tablets of cyanide of potassium to poison yourself with when you are found out. That's the reality of your millions.
Oh, no, no, no. He is quite honest. His businesses are genuine and perfectly legal.
Yeah, not even a great swindler.
So you think. But I've been too many for some honest men for all of that.
There is no pleasing you, Mr. Mangan. You are determined to be neither rich nor poor, honest nor dishonest.
There you go again. Ever since I came into this silly house, I've been made to look like a fool. Though I'm as good a man in this house as in the city.
Yes, this silly house, this strangely happy house, this agonizing house.
Stop, Ellie, or I shall howl like an animal.
This house without foundations. I shall call it Heartbreak House.
Oh, there, you have set Alfred off.
I like him best when he is howling.
Silence! I say let the heart break in silence.
Do you accept the name for your house?
It is not my house. It is only my kennel.
We have been too long here. We do not live in this house. We haunt it.
It is dreadful to think how you have been here all these years while I have gone round the world. I escaped young, but it has drawn me back. It wants to break my heart, too. But it shan't. I have left you and it behind. It was silly of me to come back. I felt sentimental about Papa and Hesione and the old place. I felt them calling to me.
But what a very natural and kindly and charming human feeling, Lady Utterword.
So I thought, Mr. Dunn. But I know now that it was only the last of my influenza. I found that I was not remembered and not wanted.
You left because you did not want us. Was there no heartbreak in that for your father? You tore yourself up by the roots. And the ground healed up and brought forth fresh plants and forgot you. What right had you to come back and probe old wounds?
You were a complete stranger to me at first, Daddy, but now I feel as if you had never been away.
Thank you, Hesione, but the influenza is quite cured. The place may be Heartbreak House to you, Miss Dunn, and to this gentleman from the city who seems to have so little self-control, but to me, it is only a very ill-regulated and rather untidy villa without any stables.
Inhabited by?
A crazy old sea captain and a young singer who adores him.
A sluttish female trying to stave off a double chin and an elderly spread, vainly wooing a born soldier of freedom.
Oh, really, Mrs. Hashabar?
A member of His Majesty's government that everybody said Stanna's a nincompoop. Don't forget him, Lady Utterword.
And a very fascinating gentleman whose chief occupation is to be married to my sister.
All heartbroken imbeciles.
Oh, no. Surely, if I may say so, rather a favorable specimen of what is best in our English culture. You are very charming people, most advanced, unprejudiced, frank, humane, unconventional, democratic, free-thinking, and everything that is delightful to thoughtful people.
You do us proud, Mazzini.
I'm not flattering, really. Where else could I feel perfectly at ease in my pajamas? I sometimes dream that I'm in very distinguished society and suddenly I have nothing on but my pajamas. Sometimes I haven't even pajamas and I always feel overwhelmed with confusion. But here, I don't mind in the least. It seems quite natural.
An infallible sign that you are now not in really distinguished society, Mr. Dunn. If you were in my house, you would feel embarrassed.
I shall take particular care to keep out of your house, Lady Utterword.
You would be quite wrong, Mr. Dunn. I should make you very comfortable, and you would not have the trouble and anxiety of wondering whether you should wear your purple and gold or your green and crimson dressing gown at dinner. You complicate life instead of simplifying it by doing these ridiculous things.
Your house is not Heartbreak House, is it, Lady Utterword?
Yet she breaks hearts, easy as her house is. That poor devil upstairs with his flute howls when she twists his heart, just as Mangan howls when my wife twists his.
That is because Randall has nothing to do but have his heart broken. It is a change from having his head shampooed. Catch anyone breaking Hastings' heart.
Yeah, the numbskull wins after all.
I shall go back to my numbskull with the greatest satisfaction, but I am tired of all of you, clever as you are.
I never set up to be clever.
I forgot you, Mr. Mangan.
Well, I don't see that quite either.
You may not be clever, Mr. Mangan, but you are successful.
I don't want to be regarded merely as a successful man. I have an imagination like anyone else. I have a presentiment.
Oh, you are impossible, Alfred. Here I am devoting myself to you, and you think of nothing but your ridiculous presentiment. You bore me. Come and talk poetry to me, under the stars.
She drags him away into the darkness.
Oh, yes, it's all very well to make fun of me, but if you only knew.
How is this all going to end?
It won't end, Mr. Hushabye. Life doesn't end, it goes on.
Oh, it can't go on forever. I'm always expecting something. I don't know what it is, but life must come to a point sometime.
The point for a young woman of your age is a baby.
Yes, but damn it, I have the same feeling. I can't have a baby.
By deputy, Hector.
But I have children. All that is over and done with for me. And yet I too feel that this can't last. We sit here talking and leave everything to Mangan and to chance and to the devil. Think of the powers of destruction that Mangan and his mutual admiration gang wield. It's madness. It's like giving a torpedo to a badly brought up child to play at earthquakes with.
I know. I used often to think about that when I was young.
Think. What's the good of thinking about it? Why don't you do something?
But I did. I joined societies and made speeches and wrote pamphlets. That was all I could do. But you know, though the people in the societies thought they knew more than Mangan, most of them wouldn't have joined if they had known as much. You see, they had never had any money to handle or any men to manage. Every year I expected a revolution or some frightful smash-up. It seemed impossible that we could blunder and muddle on any longer, but nothing happened. Except, of course, the usual poverty and crime and drink that we are used to. Nothing ever does happen. It's amazing how well we get along, all things considered.
Perhaps somebody clever than you and Mr. Mangan was at work all the time.
Perhaps so. Though I was brought up not to believe in anything, I often feel that there is a great deal to be said for the theory of an overruling Providence. After all...
Providence? I meant Hastings.
Oh, I beg your pardon, Lady Utterword.